Hello, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, and Tri-City area. This is Teddy Reese with Sunday Conversation. Today is Sunday, March 4th, 2018, and today we are having a lively conversation about, you already know, Black Panther, the thing that is taking over this country and this world right now, breaking all kind of records, have already made over $700 million. I mean, setting all kind of records. But what's beautiful about this particular movie is that it's focused on African Americans, and there are a lot of lead actors that are Black in this movie, and their acting skills are just absolutely phenomenal. So we have a panel of people here today that's going to talk about this movie. We're going to break it down. We're going to talk about symbolisms. We're going to talk about historical perspective. We're going to talk about how this movie has provided opportunity for folks to engage in community service events. And I am excited to have with me today, our first guest is Mr. Darius Prather. My man Darius, how you doing, Darius?
Pretty good. How's everyone doing?
Everybody's fine, my brother. Everybody's fine. We also have with us the one and only, no other like, Dr. Shay Anderson. That's Robert Anderson's daughter, y'all.
That's right.
Dr. Shay, how you doing, Dr. Anderson?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Okay. Everything's well? How's everything with your mentoring program?
It's going. It's going well. We're growing, and the boys are making progress every day, and I think we're learning more from them probably than they are from us.
Well, you know, that's usually how it works. You know, the Bible said the youth shall lead us, right?
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
We're going to allow the youth to lead us. And we have also a guy who's not a stranger to this show. Every time he's on, we always have some amazing conversation because the brother is deeper than the Pacific Ocean. That is Brother Carl Brown. How you doing, Carl Brown?
Doing well. How are you?
Everything's going well?
Everything's going well.
All right.
Real good.
You know, we did a Christmas program at the church, and we tried to do Temptations for that Silent Night song. You know,
they say you've never been booed out of church.
Area of our church. We got folks in nothing. I was about to say something I shouldn't say. I love Greater Bellwood Baptist Church. That is my church. But let's talk about Black Panther a little bit, Darius, my friend.
What's up, man?
You know, Darius, brother. I remember seeing your first post on Facebook, and you were saying we should do something with this movie in our youth. What gave you that idea?
This is so many just awesome symbolisms in the movie. I've been like following the comic for years, and it to make the big screen when they first came out with Captain America: Civil War. And how T'Challa just came out and basically stole the show. I was just like, whoa. So once they announced that they were going to do a full-fledged movie, I was like, oh, this is going to be some awesome symbolism. It's going to be the composite representation of just a protagonist in a Black film that we really need. And it's kind of always just been, I don't know, say one-sided, but it's amazing just to see that development. It's really going to help Hollywood, especially,
right,
just kind of see that if you use this avenue for diversity, like, it'll pay off.
It'll pay off. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, and you had the vision to start, was it a GoFundMe?
Yes, it was a GoFundMe.
Uh-huh.
My first initial action was just asking, like, hey, is anyone doing anything like this around here? I think it was in one of the groups, and no one really responded. They were just like, oh, yeah, that'd be a good idea. The only thing was actually doing it. And it's kind of how most of those conversations in this area start. Like, no one's really doing it, or people just talking about doing it. I'm young. I'm 31, but I'm the type to say, hey, if no one's doing it, I'm just going to pick up the ball and get it moving. So,
and brother, you ran with that ball because you know, through your efforts and through the generous donors that gave through the process, you were able to take 200 plus kids
right
to see the Black Panther movie here in Columbus. Mm-hmm. What was that night like?
Oh boy, that was,
because I saw you out with your full gear on. I saw you in the photos, all dressed out. Who were you dressed as that day?
I was dressed as T'Challa.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of people that do know me, they know I do cosplay full fledged. I go to conventions. I'm a full fledged nerd, and that's just my lifestyle. So it's for me to do that. I just felt it would just amp it up a little bit more,
right,
for the kids, and just give them that experience. Just to say, all right, well, not only did I just see the Black Panther movie, movie, and we got our concessions taken care of. T'Challa was actually there, so they can look back later on and be like, oh man, they really, you know, brought the fireworks out for us.
You know, that's something they'll probably never forget. I can, you know, I can envision them now as adults and you know, at home talking with their kids as they're watching a replay of Black Panther and telling right. them, I was at the movie theater when this first came out, and this is what was done for me.
Exactly.
You know, what are some of the things you heard the kids say that were there that night?
It was just a lot of emotions. Got a lot of hugs. It wasn't necessarily what they were saying to me, but I just could see the excitement on their faces, and they were like, oh, you're really T'Challa? And, you know, I was playing along and getting them in the pose and showing them how to pose, taking pictures. So it was just a lot of excitement, a lot of emotions, and about to cry in the movies just about because everybody was hugging me. So it was beneficial not only for the kids, but it was just, you know, it was like, I guess a lot of people say once you get into servant leadership, community service, it's like addictive. Like you always want to give back in some kind of way.
Yes, sir. It is. Oh, yeah. It is very addictive. Dr. Anderson, you know, we saw artistic ability at its highest in this movie. I mean, potentially some Grammy performance going on. From an arts perspective, what type of impact do you think this will have for Black arts as we move forward and children's interest in movie and plays and things of that nature?
I think it's going to have a big impact, not just in Hollywood, but also, you know, locally, where, you know, performing arts organizations struggle, you know, that's the trend anyway. And then when you look at Black performing arts organizations, that challenge gets even greater just in terms of access. Where can, you know, young Black children go to get arts training? Where can more seasoned Black actors go and have full access to the stage? Here in Columbus, the Liberty does provide that access, but I think it'll start to open a lot more doors, you know, again, locally and, of course, in Hollywood. In terms of, you know, acting, training for acting, right. and people aspiring to be in the arts, you know, and even if the ultimate goal is not Broadway or, you know, the music business, the entertainment business, the arts is still the thing that boosts self-esteem and builds confidence and shapes people for medical school and law school and other careers. So I definitely think it's, you know, I'm just curious to see what the next few months and next couple of years look like.
You know, I could definitely relate to that because as a lawyer, I can tell you there are certainly a lot of lawyers that put on a good show in the courtroom. I mean, they put on a very, very good show. Now, if I'm not mistaken, this movie was filmed at Tyler Perry Studios in Atlanta, right? Mm-hmm. And we even had a local kid that was an extra in the movie.
Oh, wow.
Here in the area. I saw him on the news.
Yeah, I don't remember his name. Remember his name? I remember reading the article about it, and it was pretty awesome. Was he an extra, or was he...
He had a part or something like that. He had a small part in the movie. But it's the fact that someone from this area
right.
was able to be a part of a production that's so big. Mm-hmm. You know, and when Tyler Perry first engaged in conversations about building this studio in the Atlanta area, there were a lot of people who had doubts about it, you know, and about the success of it. Mm-hmm. Now this man can say the most grossing movie financially in the world's history was filmed at his studio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talk about the access, Dr. Anderson, of local artists who now, with all of this happening, you no longer have to go to California, mm-hmm. to Hollywood to make it. Mm-hmm. You could just drive right up 85 and find an opportunity.
You can, you know, and even thinking about it locally, you know, the film industry in Columbus is growing, you mm-hmm. know, also, and then even going back to Access and thinking about the theater and some of the young folks who, you know, do our artistic stuff, they came to town fresh out of Albany State and, you know, were musical director, artistic directors at our shows, and then not long after you see them with leading roles in Dreamgirls, you know, they're in Grease, Newsies, all of the shows that are happening, you know, other places in town or over at the Springer. So, again, the access is always, you know, definitely an important thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Carl, brother, I just love your perspective sometimes. And I just want to ask you generally, you know, after watching that movie, and someone like you with such a diverse background, you know, entrepreneur, military background, born and raised in New York, and now living in the South, two different cultures. You've seen you've lived in one of the largest cities in the world, to being in a more isolated area in the South and having cultural differences. You've gone from living in an area where there's a great appreciation. You know, original Broadway plays right there in New York, you know, where Oprah opened her Color Purple play right there in New York. So, you know, seeing something like this play out and having something of such grand scale on the national level for everyone to have access to, break that down for me. How did that impact you? How did you feel after watching it?
Proud. I think that was one of the first feelings that rolled over me, was just a feeling of wow. Because I can remember when Black Panther, the comics, first hit, telling my age, 1966.
Wow.
And how everyone, it was featured, he was a guest appearance in a Fantastic Four, number 52. Mm-hmm. And every comics were 12 cents. And everyone was like, yo, you have to go to get the new Fantastic Four. Because he was on the cover.
Wait a minute, Carl. What you're telling me is that Black Panther, even back in 1966, had a financial impact on the comic book economy.
That's correct.
So, where my generation is looking at this movie, Darius, we're looking at this movie saying, oh, wow, what an amazing thing, $700 million. You're here telling me that this is not new.
No.
Black Panther's done this before.
That's correct. It came out and people ran. I think one of the things with me was some of our conversations with people, good friends here, who were born and raised in the South, and even my cousins, because my mother was originally from South Carolina, who were not aware of the Black Panther from 1966.
Wow.
And I did not realize it was basically territorial. You know, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, basically the originators, were two white Jewish men from New York City who came up with that concept. And with him to be on the cover of the Fantastic Four in 1966. Think about 1966. Mm-hmm. When was Brown versus the Board of Education ratified? What, 1967?
Yeah.
So here you have a black superhero appearing. And his first issue, he basically challenged the Fantastic Four and lured them to Wakanda just to test his skills. And became friends with them, but it was initially to test his skills against the Fantastic Four. And just sitting there in that movie and just watching the faces and seeing the young people and watching the older persons also, just the look of amazement on their faces, and just watching where that has come and where we have come from as a people, and originally, and basically realizing our greatness.
You know, that's deep, because you know you got me thinking about 1966, and I knew that you're stuck in my head for some reason. 1966 was the year that the Georgia House of Representatives voted 184-12 to deny Julian Bunn his seat as a result of his opposition to the Vietnam War. So this man had been rightfully elected to the Georgia House of Representatives, but they, and that shows where we were, you know, somewhat coming off of the civil rights movement, and and still kind of on the tail end of integration. And here you are growing up as a kid in New York, and your mind and your spirits are being inspired because you're seeing this black actor on the front of a comic book.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And kids in the South don't even know about it.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct. It was groundbreaking. And you know, comics were 12 cent, and I think everybody ran and to get it, to read it, and to experience it. And so then you became, the economic impact was there, because now, remember, this became a series. And there was, unfortunately, at that time, there were a lot of different things that went on with that. One being that even Marvel, when you look at the history of it, Marvel at one point did not feel that there were enough white persons in the Black Panther comics.
Right.
So Stan Lee and Jack Kirby said, okay, we will fix that. So they actually had the Black Panther fighting the Ku Klux Klan in one of the issues.
Issue 13.
There it is.
13 or 11. It's one of those.
So
I'm close.
See, a lot of people are not aware of how progressive they were.
Carl, do you think that's part of the reason why some of your extreme right-wing white supremacist groups were such up in arms about this Black Panther movie rolling out, because they understood the historical perspective that in the comic strip, Black Panther actually fought the Ku Klux Klan?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Not only that, he also... No.
And then the Black Panther Party came a few months later.
That's
right?
Correct. That's exactly right.
So and that's interesting too, because that debunks the theory that Black Panther came out to promote the Black Panther Party, which was not true. Black Panther came out first, and then the Black Panther Party evolved from that.
That's right. Correct. Mm-hmm. They even changed the name of the Black Panther to the Black Leopard at one point.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But then they realized that that wasn't going to fly, so they went back to the original version, to even to the point that they at one point they had actually drew him with a half mask. Mm-hmm. But because of the impact, they realized that there was some in the white community who could not accept the fact that you could actually see the skin color of this individual.
You know, I think it's come full circle. So I think this release of Black Panther, I think we'll see a shift, you know, in a lot of things in terms of economics, you know, with folks saying, well, I guess next Tyler Perry will do My Dear Goes to Wakanda. And then he waits and he's like, well, actually, you know, it was filmed at Tyler Perry Studios. So, you know, for y'all who might have been throwing shade at Tyler Perry, I think that was an awesome thing in and of itself. And then just the fact that, you know, it's not just a black movie, it's a black movie that we can be proud of. I went with my parents and my 11-year-old daughter, so it, you know, it was good for the whole family. It was great to see, you know, churches, groups like the one Darius got together, coming together, you know, going to get their dashikis and gear from black-owned businesses, you know, so it just brought, you know, a lot of things back to the forefront that I think, particularly in the climate we're in now, that we had, you know, gotten away from. Mm-hmm. You know, and even with it ending with, you know, the community center being opened, and looking at particularly our black boys and what happens to them. So I'm just excited to see, you know, what kinds of things are born from.
And then listening to Darius, you know, and things, one of the key things I tell everyone, I said, just think, the director of this is just 31 years old.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Think about that youth movement, that someone would come and say, I'm going to give you a budget of $200 million.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't happen overnight.
Right.
He did Fruitvale Station
and Creed,
first.
Right,
and exceeded
And then he
that.
Did Creed, and they exceeded the budget on that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, you know what? We're on to something here.
Right.
We're on to something, and it's unfortunate that there were probably many other people just as talented as this young man that may have been on to things many, many years before him, but never given an opportunity. And I think as a society, we were given somewhat of an insight to the activities of Hollywood with the whole Weinstein issue, with the sexual assault issues. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize one or two or three people controlled who made it into the industry.
That's great. Yeah. That greenlit. You got to get greenlit.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's exactly right.
Well, I tell you, this is an amazing conversation. We're going to take a quick break. This is Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. Don't go anywhere. You want to hear the other half of this conversation. I have some amazing friends here in the studio with me. And we're going to continue talking about the Black Panther movie and the impact and what we think this will do in the future as far as our youth, as far as black people getting opportunities to show our talent, to showcase what we are capable of doing. This is Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. We'll be right back.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. But a little over a year ago, we realized she couldn't take care of herself without our help. And well, how could I not be there for her? I had no idea how hard it would be and just what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and, even for me, ways to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics that got me started, but also information about the hurdles I was facing in this new role. I could even connect with experts and hear from others who had been in my place. I know this road we're on isn't an easy one, but I'm really happy to have the extra help for her and for me. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. This message is brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back with Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. And again, I have in the studio here with me today, one of my good friends and a young leader. I'm proud of this young man. He's making moves. He's showing up on the scene. You know, he went from a quiet little guy to, now I'm going to express my opinion, execute my First Amendment right to freedom of speech. That's Darius Prather, y'all. I'm glad to have him here. And I have also with me another young lady who, I tell you, her passion is so strong for the community. When she's doing something, she don't hesitate to give you a call. She'll say, hey, Teddy, I need you to be here this time in that place. And you know what? I don't even ask no questions because that's Dr. Shea Anderson. And you can't tell her no. How you doing, Dr. Anderson?
All right.
And my man, Carl Brown, the man with the plan. I tell you, Carl impressed me every time we talk. And so he's already said some things today that have knocked me out of my socks. And I'm looking forward to the other half of this conversation. Now, you know, I just want to put some things in perspective. If you missed the first half, Carl talked about how the Black Panther first rolled out in a comic book strip back in 1966. It was 12 cents, y'all, to buy that book. And he talked about how young black kids ran to the store to buy that book because they were so amazed that they actually had a black actor on the front of the comic book strip. And just in case you've forgotten what was going on in 1966, you know, Dr. King is making his moves, trying to get civil rights for everyone all across the United States of America. We have race riots in Lansing, Michigan going on, and other race riots all across this country. And 1966, only in the New York region were they able to roll out a comic book that had a black actor on the front, because people in the South didn't even know anything about it. So yeah. The society and the economy here wouldn't have it.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. Wow. So Darius, hearing Carl talk about that from that perspective, and now thinking about in that context,
right,
what you did for those 200 children, mm-hmm, bringing them to a point to where, you know, we just started the conversation with them going to the movies.
Right.
Now I would like to see us continue this conversation with even exposing them to some of the things Carl just said. You know, how do you think that would unfold? How do you think we should approach that as a community?
Now that we, I guess, have their attention, one thing with me and the stigma of comic books and that type of culture, Marvel, DC, is that if you're into comic books, if you're into certain things, then you're, I guess the notion is, oh, you're acting like a white boy, all this other stuff. But you can be a nerdy black guy and have these aspirations. You want to be a director of, you know, a multi-million dollar film, you can be that. Just work hard for it, but we need that representation. And without that proper representation in Hollywood, and, you know, just within our peers, people like us just pushing for that, you know, it's a super important thing to have. So conversations like this, conversations about Black Panther and just having that narrative, it's the first step. We just have to keep pushing that, supporting black film and just black ideas, anything that just accelerates our culture in general.
Yeah, I think, too, that's a good point, Darius, and I think it goes back to that whole thing about access. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the things we might take for granted that, you know, the kids I work with at Baker, for example, we might assume, you know, that they might think, work, you know, comic books, or, you know, white boy, that's what white boys do, or it's nerdy, but then a lot of them probably don't even know about comic books, you know what I mean?
Right,
so
right.
And there are a lot of things that I take for granted with them that I've started to be like, wow, you know what I mean? And they, you know, it's 2018, and there's so many things that they don't know. They've not left the city of Columbus, a lot of them. So, you know, figuring out things like that that can make an impact, like exposing them to comic books.
Right.
And, you know, they're looking for anything to hold on to, something meaningful, and, you know, that they can kind of throw themselves into. So
yeah.
I think that'd be interesting to see.
Last year, I did my first time doing a kind of an anime comic book kind of convention locally called Nauticon. And it was just an opportunity to kind of get that kind of narrative here here in Columbus and have a pretty nice influence. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to reach out to the community to, you know, get, you know, it was free, so anyone could pretty much go. Mm-hmm. All you needed was a ticket. So I want to kind of keep pushing that. I want to work with some of the committees in the city or some of the schools to try to get maybe set like a field trip package or something. Just get our youth to get involved that kind of thing and see what, you know, benefits the STEM programs have, to see, you know, certain comic book writers and cosplayers and, you know, gaming figureheads, stuff like that. Like, a lot of these things that these kids don't really have access to, or they just have this stigma that, they can't have anything to really do with it because it's a white people thing. It ain't nothing like that. Mm-hmm. So we can change that narrative. We just got to keep, you know, pushing.
And, you know, and I think we need some creative things for our children these days. I mean, right now we're looking at, you know, we're still watching on TV the news from Parkland, Florida, where, you know, the dude went in there and shot up the school, just senseless murder. And we're going to have a separate conversation about that on Sunday, conversations about school safety. And also, you know, have a reasonable conversation about gun control. We're going to talk about that too coming up. But Shay, in 1966, you know, keeping with that year, Carl, a young man killed seven people at a beauty school in Texas just for the TV fame, because there had been two mass murders prior to that year, and he saw how they were all on the news, and that happened. So, you know, we're still dealing with issues today that some of the same issues we dealt with back then, because we're not making reasonable change for them and trying to circumvent them, but from the perspective of our children, and how this could change the narrative, you know, and how this, you know, the comic book industry is almost a forgotten industry now, but you can't drive down the interstate in Atlanta without seeing graffiti everywhere. So clearly there are children somewhere with an artistic ability that want to express themselves. Right. Shay, being in the world of art, Shay, how do we tap into that more and really pull them in and work with them?
You know, it's tricky because education today is not, there's not really space for that to the extent that there needs to
be. Why isn't there space for that?
You know, because it's work and it requires a shift in thinking and just a whole bunch of stuff that's got to happen collectively if it's one or two.
But we're the country that put a man on the moon. We're the country that dammed up the Colorado River and made Las Vegas. We can't come up with a school curriculum that will entertain our children and keep them active?
We could, but, you know, like I said, it requires a shift in thinking. It requires...
By who? Should it be? Is it coming from the state?
Parents, by, you know, community. It's a collective effort, and it definitely requires a shift in thinking and a space and opportunity, you know, to be creative. When you look at places like the Ron Clark Academy,
right,
exactly. Awesome curriculum already.
I've been down the slide. I've been down the slide. Yeah, I love that school.
I got to go visit.
Yeah, you should.
I just watch on Facebook. A Wrinkle in Time. Awesome, fun things that they're doing, and you have to give children that space.
You know, he was in town this week.
No, I didn't.
He was over at Teachers Wednesday. He met there with some of their employees Wednesday, and but you know, we got somebody like that coming to town. You know, man, he needs an audience with every educator in Muskogee County.
You know, and it's little things. You know, I remember my first day teaching at Carver, and I had ninth graders, and I was thankful for the job, and Ms. Lynch was like, ninth graders, here you go. And I got my book and my keys, and the thing I first realized was, okay, we're going to listen to Foxy 105 while we do this work. And it was, you know, magic happened. They were quiet and focused, and even, you know, with the boys in the after-school program, some of them like to draw, and that's the only thing. And if they're frustrated, they're gonna go and draw their anime or whatever it is, and if they, you know, they're angry, I'm like, okay, you need some paper, you know, and that's their thing. So allowing space for that type of thing, I think, is what will, you know, get them more engaged.
Well, you know, and in defense of our educators, I hear quite a few teachers say that they wish we could go back to the time where they had more creativity in the classroom.
It's hard now.
Everything hard. Right now is like it's scripted and monotonous. You know, it's a monotony to it. You got to do A, B, C, and D every day. It's almost like working in a factory, putting a cherry on top of a pie car. They're doing the same thing every day. And you have you work with a lot of men. You mentor a lot of kids too through 100 and on your personal efforts. Correct. You know, what do you say about this?
I think that was one of the things that jumped out at me, you know, especially in 1966 with the comics and the trading of comics. It forced young black boys who fell in love with the character to read.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to read, you had to read for reading comprehension.
Carl, I got to stop you. Say that one more time. Please say that. Listeners, please, everyone out there in radio land, listen to what this man just said one more time.
It forced young black boys who were interested in the character to read and to follow the storyline.
Right.
Because it was a continuous storyline. Mm-hmm. So you had to read, but not just read the words. You had to read for reading comprehension.
So versus running to the house to make sure I catch the next episode of storyline of Real Housewives, or the next episode of storyline of Hip Hop in New York, you know, in Atlanta, you know, you had to wait on a book.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what goes back to what Ms. Anderson was saying, the shift, because that was also a shift. Mm-hmm. You have to remember in 1966, you had none of those other distractions. Mm-hmm. And we have to be aware that these new distractions have come across gradually, but they're now running at full speed. Mm-hmm. And so we have to, as a community, make up our minds.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to implode that and bring it back to where, you know what, the television goes off at a certain time?
Well, why not incorporate it? Why not have comic book strips on the iPhone so they can flip through the pages and read them?
But, you know, a lot of them are hungry for distractions other than that. That's just something to do to, you know, because we all do it mindlessly, you know, when there's right. many other things we can do. And, you know, we drop phones off. When they get in there after school, they drop the phones off, and we don't think about them anymore until it's over. We go outside, we draw, we play bingo and checkers and
right.
talk and eat dinner together. So I think that, you know, it's just got to be more opportunities for them.
But there's also some advantages to it, too, because
definitely.
Black Panther would not have been Black Panther without social media.
That's true. Correct. Exactly. That's exactly right.
True. Without social
that's
media, right. it would not have
exactly.
been.
That's
and
true.
That's how it reached the young, particularly young black folks.
Right. Yeah. So to that point, and it's kind of what got me into cosplay and that whole community, is when I kind of first started, I didn't think there was even, you know, much of a community for black people in that kind of realm of cosplay and going to conventions. And then I kind of linked up with different organizations and groups, and I was just like, wow, there's a lot of other people out here just like me that like this type of stuff. You know, it's not this section to just this one group. So if you can give that exposure and have those kids saying, all right, there are more kids out here like this, like me, I'm not an outsider. You know, if you can give that link to those kids, and so, to open their minds so they don't feel like they're the weirdos, or, you know, you got kids in middle school, high school that feel like, oh, if I watch anime, if I talk about my friends, they're going to think I'm lame. But there's all these other outlets out there for other kids to link up and say, hey, I'm into this too. So I think like a local group, you know, just like not cosplay necessarily, but, you know, a black geeks group or something like that. I was thinking about starting something like that here for the kids, just as a way to kind of get that narrative started, and they can all just interact and mingle, you know, incorporate things they like. Because I go to conventions and I'll dress up in cosplay and I'll go party the same night and I'll be in costume. But, you know, listen to music and just there's so many ways you can implement what they like and also show them in a different world outside of just what, you know, they might see just from their peers and, you know.
I was just going to say, and I think when you do things like that, you see an immediate impact in their attitudes about school.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it their whole mindset starts to change. So now they almost subconsciously start to see the importance of maybe behaving a little differently, or
right.
encouraging the people around them, hey, man, don't do that. You know,
right. uh-huh.
you start to see them correcting each other and, you know, maybe putting a little more effort into their work. So mm-hmm. Without directly, you know, having homework time or things like that, but knowing, hey, I got to see Mr. Darius and talk to him about my school day or my grades, you start to see a ripple effect.
Right, right.
Program.
Because it shows them someone cares.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we do want them to succeed, and we do want our youth to know that there's a group of cheerleaders out here, men and women, all of us with pom-poms, saying, go, young people, go.
Right.
Because we know that, you know, oftentimes we tend to celebrate people later on in life when they've done amazing things, you know. But Dr. Martin Luther King died at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
He started in his 20s with his leadership. This man changed our nation with the help of a lot of others, but as the leader of that movement, at a very, very young age of age that some people now in our society would look at someone who's his age now and say, oh, they're not ready for leadership. Oh, they're not ready to take the mantle. Right. Oh, they can't lead this. Oh, they can't serve in this elected capacity. They're not old enough yet. They don't know enough yet. You know, and it's so hypocritical to what Dr. King lived. It's hypocritical to his legacy, right. To what he meant.
I think that one of the key things, I think, too, is, you know, we've taken young people to see the movies. I think I encourage people to go back again and take them back, or even break down some of the life lessons that were taught in the movie. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't just a movie.
It wasn't just
a movie. There were a lot of messages.
Symbolism.
Yeah, that were tons. Put into that movie. I mean, even from the opening scene, where you're in Oakland, California, and there's a black... A lot of people might miss the fact that there was a Public Enemy poster.
Two-Short was playing in the background.
Yeah.
And the tribes and how they were able to agree as to how the leader would become the leader. Mm-hmm. And also, one of the key things that jumped out at me when you looked at the mountain men at the end, you know, towards the end, you know, in the movie, you know, we look at them as being the mountain men, but in the comics, they were the gorilla men, the ape men, in the comics. But in turn, you think about that. Someone comes to you because he was offered the power, he was offered the herb to gain the power. And he chose to say, no, I lost the fight fair and square.
Right.
So I'm going to take you to where we have him, where you presume him to be dead. We have kept him alive. And while you offered this to me, my honor and tradition says... No, it's not for me.
You know, that's playing fair and square. That's being a trustworthy and honest person. That's letting the rules of the game, just like in society today, allowing our laws to lead, but making sure that everyone abide by the law.
That's correct.
No one is greater or better than anyone else. And I think that was another important symbolism too, when they went through how I think it was at the point when they were at the museum and he was looking at those artifacts and he told the lady, the curator, I'll take this off of your hands, you know, and he went through the history of how Europeans came into Africa and basically stole so much from the people there, stole individuals and enslaved them and stole resources and stole land and everything else. That was one of the part of the movies right there that just really just struck me, because I was like, wow, all of these people all across this country is going to hear this. And it's going to finally and hopefully click in the minds of young people that we have a history, too.
That's correct.
Right.
And it's not to be celebrated just in Black History Month. There were some, you know, at Black institutions, Black cities, Black wealth and everything throughout the continent of Africa.
Right.
You know, there is. And so to me, that was, what did that part of the movie mean to you?
Oh man, I gasped. I was like, "Whoa!" Like that was amazing. And just so many symbolisms in the movie. There's no a lot of the warriors, the women don't have any kind of perm or any conditioning stuff in their hair. They're all natural. It's so many different types of symbolisms. I think when she was I forget her name, but when she was in Korea, she basically snatched a wig off because it was just like uncomfortable for her. She felt like she had to kind of blend in. And that scene,
right?
And then once it was time to fight, she was like, all right, taking this thing off, let's go. So it was a very natural state, and it had that kind of resistance to the outside world. Throughout the entire movie, he was calling the what's his name, colonizer, the entire time. So it was just so many like little taboos that we don't really pick up because we're so used to it. That, you know, just with Western society in general, that, you know, we have a token white guy in the movie, and he's, you know, he has a part, but it's 90% black. So we have that control over the movie. We have a narrative that our narrative is better, not better necessarily, but it's more powerful than what they're saying in the West.
What we traditionally see. It's a lot more powerful than what we traditionally right. see, and it's a lot more in your face. Mm-hmm. It's not subtle. Right. I mean, in this particular movie, you know, the it had two white guys in it, one who played the bad guy, mm-hmm. and then you had one who played a representative of the United States government.
Right.
You know, but I think something that stuck out to me too at the very end, the people of Wakanda came together and decided that they had to help save the world.
Right.
And they had to help advance the world.
And I felt like they learned that much from Killmonger as he came back. He was like, hey, y'all got all this technology. Y'all have all these resources and you see other people suffering in the world. Why don't you use that? So as T'Chaka kind of built that legacy of, hey, we're a great nation. We'll keep everything here. They neglected the rest of the world. As Killmonger was a little bit on the more rebellious side, as you know, the battle commenced and he was defeated, died, and all that stuff. I felt like T'Challa learned, like, okay, well, he has a point. He was a little bit right. aggressive for what right. he's trying to say, but there are people out here that also need help.
And there were some people that didn't like that aspect of the movie, like, why I gotta be the black guy that comes back and try to disturb things. But if you really watch the storyline, he was only following the culture. He was within his rights to come back and challenge sure. because he was a part of the bloodline.
That's
right.
correct.
So
that's
he
correct.
Was in his right. So even though, you know, the movie may have portrayed him and some of us had negative feelings toward him, mm-hmm. he wasn't necessarily someone out of line for his right. efforts. Well,
right.
I tell you guys, this has been an amazing conversation and we got to wrap it up here. And I want to just give all of you an opportunity to just leave with some last comments. You know, for someone who has seen the movie and there's just something in particular you want them to get from it. Just real quick, we'll go around and talk about that. We'll start with you, Darius.
If you saw the movie, keep in mind the narrative that was set. We've already topped just almost pretty much every Marvel movie record thus far, and we can keep doing that. We just keep pushing the narrative. We keep supporting black film, black creativity, black artists, black businesses, and just kind of keep pushing. I mean, we're going to have different spectrums of blackness, and we don't want people to think that blackness is this one spectrum, that everything doesn't have to be Tyler Perry necessarily, but there's different ways to be black, and we can just keep promoting that. So in your community, in your home, wherever you are, just push for excellence in any way you can.
All right. Dr. Anderson.
Firstly, if you've not seen it, go see it. If you've seen it, go see it again. I definitely plan to. And I guess for me, there were so many messages and takeaways and things, but Wakanda, I want to see more of that, you know, even right here in Columbus. Mm-hmm. They took care of each other. They were strategic in the things they did. They came together. They had meaningful conversations about stuff. And again, they just took care of each other as a community, and they moved, you know, together in their decision making, and kind of tried their best to do what was fair and what was right. So, for me, that definitely made an impact. So, and again, go see it.
Go see it.
Seen it yet? Go see it,
Mr. Brown.
Yeah, I'm going to say second, third, and fourth what she just said. Go see it. Go see it, and then go see it again, and take those lessons back for parents. Sit down and discuss with your children the lessons that you see in the movie. Have them express what they feel about the movie. What's right. important to them about it? Listen to what they have to say, and just remember, we are a community, and we have to be involved in growing our community, and we can't let someone else grow our community for us, and then we complain about how they do it.
Or unless someone we've got to do story. It. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Exactly.
Well, Mr. Darius Prather, Dr. Shay Anderson, Mr. Carl Brown, thank you guys so much for your time today on this Sunday for coming in to have this conversation with us about the Black Panther movie. It is taking over the globe by storm.
Yes.
It is impacting so many people, and we got to make sure we ride this momentum for positive change for particularly our communities, especially our young folks. This is an opportunity for us to turn some things around and get this ship on the right path, to get everybody rowing at the same time so that we'll have maximum movement. And I'm excited about everything. I hope we get to continue the conversations. I hope we get to take the conversations even further. I'm challenging Darius to get some things done with some school kids so we can go have a conversation with them about this and just have a real talk and reflect on some things that we learned from the movie and tie them to the true history historical perspective that we know exists. This is Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. Don't forget to join me next Sunday. We're going to have another amazing conversation, and I hope you enjoyed this one, and I hope you have a great week. Take care.
The views and expressions of Sunday Conversation are not the views of Davis Broadcasting Incorporation, advertisers, nor their staff.